This material is sort of related to my doctoral dissertation, but I won't bore you with all the details. The subject of my dissertation was Rabbi, or you might call him Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and he's often called Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, but I could give you 100 pages of my dissertation about why I'm not going to call him that, but don't worry about you calling him that. It's a complicated issue. And this is the story of basically that both Talmuds, the earlier Talmud Yerushalmi and the later Talmud Bavli, both of them record the story that Rabbi, as his role as sort of leading rabbi of his generation, he decided to try to get rid of Tisha B'Av, to uproot it, is what it says. He tried to uproot Tisha B'Av. And for various reasons, it didn't work. We're a testimony to the fact that it didn't work. So really the question that I want to explore here is more or less why. Why would you do that? Why would you think that, at a certain point in time, maybe Tisha B'Av is over? And I think thinking about this question, and sort of the way sort of I've phrased it on the sheet, is Tisha B'Av eternal? I think thinking about this question helps us unpack the different role of sort of history and myth and commemoration in the festivals in general, not just Tisha B'Av, but sort of in general. Because, you know, all the festivals have some combination of some history, some myth, something we're commemorating, or some story that we're telling. And sometimes it really matters whether it's on the specific day, and sometimes it doesn't really matter if it's on the specific day. So we'll sort of kind of play out a little bit of that, which is part of what's at stake here. In other words, if Tisha B'Av is a commemoration of the destruction of the temple that happened on the 9th of Av, then the 9th of Av, the date, the 9th of Av, matters a great deal. If Tisha B'Av is less sort of historically rooted, but more sort of mythologically rooted as a sort of a place where we can just hold all of the Jewish tragedies, well, then it doesn't really matter whether it's on the 9th of Av per se. It could be on the 10th of Av, could be on the 8th of Av, and that might be fine as well. And that's part of the question here, is how rooted are these festivals in sort of historical happenings and historical commemoration, as opposed to sort of a more, what I would call a mythological framework of just, less historically rooted. So that's what we're gonna explore today. So it all starts with this Mishnah, which sort of lays out for the first time what is being commemorated on Tisha B'Av. So we're going to see this sort of the question about the 9th of Av also bleeds into the question of the 17th of Tammuz, and both of them are here in this Mishnah, the fast day from 3 weeks ago and the fast day today. And there are five things that happen on each of these days which are being commemorated. Now we're going to go list through the five things. B'Shivah'asar B'Tammuz Nishtabru Haluchot. On the 17th of Tammuz, the tablets were broken. Ubatala tamid, and the regular sacrifice, the daily sacrifice, ceased. The Hufka Ha'ir, the city was surrounded. The Saraf Apistemos et Torah, a guy called Apistemos, I can't really tell you much about him or exactly when he lived, he burned the Torah, presumably a scroll. Ve'emid Selam Behechal, and he placed an image in the sanctuary, which it presumably goes back to Apistemos, but could be someone else, could be a Roman, who put it there. Or maybe Apistemos is a Roman, I don't know. But somebody put an idol into the temple. But Tisha B'Av, Nigzar Lavotein Shalodi Kansul Aret. On the 9th of Av, it was decreed that our ancestors couldn't go into the land, couldn't enter the land after their disaster of the spies. V'charav Habayit Barishana Uvashaniya, and the temple was destroyed, both the first time and the second time. V'nil Kadar Beitar, and the fortress of Beitar was captured. Beitar, this is normally associated with the Bar Kokhba revolt, the end of the Bar Kokhba revolt, so the final battle which ended the Judean resistance there. V'nechrasha ha'ir, and the city was, it's normally translated, plowed, but I think it could also mean silenced. Both could be taken up in this route. The city, presumably Jerusalem, and for about a century and a half or something like that, the whole of Jerusalem was forbidden for Jews to live in. That includes when this Mishnah was probably composed. So that it may be referring to that. It was like a place that was renamed Aelia Capitolonia, and Jews were forbidden from living there after the Bar Kokhba revolt for a little while. One wonders, firstly, what did they really all happen on the same day? Did they not? Who knows? I mean, you could do the, if you look at Rashi, you can actually do the maths and work out when the tablets were broken by Moshe on the Shiva Sarat Tammuz. It involves actually a little bit of making some 30-day months that are normally 29 days, but you can pull it off. So that's the sort of setup. The setup here is sort of makes the 9th of Av as a major day in the calendar that we need to think about is these five events. We're going to see straight away that we're going to get to a discussion in the Talmud Yerushalmi, in the earlier of the two Talmuds. And we're going to see this discussion already sort of starts to break up this day of the 9th of Av as being so central. So already in the Mishnah, actually, you can see, and you know, many of us, the way sort of modern Judaism practices during the 9 days of the week of Tisha B'Av, there's all sorts of things that sort of come with Tisha B'Av that don't actually fall on the day of Tisha B'Av. And we'll sort of play that out a little more as well. It's so the Mishnah that we're anchored on here is Mishnechnas Av, when Av enters, right? Since the beginning of Av, Mamatin Basimcha, you have to reduce happiness. This is sort of the opposite of the song for Adar, where you have to increase happiness. And then, so there's something for Av, for the whole 9 days. And there's also Shabbat, Shechal Tisha B'Av, but Lehiot B'Tocha. If there's the week that Tisha B'Av falls in, there are other things that happen. For example, Asurin Milasaper Ul Michabes. You are forbidden from having your hair cut or from doing laundry. And then Uvachamisha Mutarim Ibn Echbalash. Okay, fine. And then on Thursday, you have to do it anyway because we need to get ready for Shabbat. That's just the general setup. So already you can see sort of the way that this Mishnah sets up Tisha B'Av. It's not just a day, it's a day which comes sort of accompanied with a bunch of other things. And that's sort of the theme that gets picked up by the Amoraim, by the later rabbis here, the commentators on this Mishnah, which is sort of gets played out. And so we're going to get a little bit of intro before we get to the main story that we want to think about, which is Rabbi's attempt to abolish Tisha B'Av. So the first sort of lead-in, Rabbi Yirmiyahu b'Shem Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Bedin hayashu mit'anin ba'asiri shebo nisraf. Actually, logically, we should be celebrating Tisha B'Av on the 10th. The 10th of Av, not the 9th of Av, because on the 10th of Av, that was when the temple was burning, and that's what we should be commemorating. So, balama bachi. So how come we end up doing this on the 9th? Shebo hitchila hapuran. It's because the punishment began. It's not totally obvious what Rabbi Yirmiyah or Rabbi Chiya meant by that exactly, but there is a tradition which sort of unpacks it. So if we assume that the tradition accurately unpacks what Rabbi Chiya was saying, then this is what he meant. V'tanichein, b'shvi'i nichnasu l'tocho, on the 7th of Av, they, presumably the Romans, entered it, presumably the temple. B'shemini hayu mekarkarin bo. This is a bit of a rare word, but it seems like it's about kir, as in a wall. So they sort of tore down the walls on the 8th. But she hitzitu v'ata'or, and on the 9th, they set the fire in it, uvasiri nisraf, and it actually burned on the 10th. So again, this is sort of another way of expressing that the 9th of Av might not be so significant. Actually, there was a multi-day process which culminated in the 10th of Av, and indeed, you know, even today, halachically, there are many of the prohibitions that are centered on Tisha B'Av last until Mincha on the 10th to take into account exactly this, the fact that it was still burnt, the temple was still burning on the 10th. So we can see that the date of Tisha B'Av might not already be so significant because it actually, the culmination of a process, not even the culmination, it's the middle of a process that started on the 7th, continued on the 8th, then went through the 9th and also the 10th. So Rabbi Yirmiyah sort of does the best that he can. He says, well, it seems like we should be celebrating this fast or observing this fast on the 10th to commemorate the actual burning. And he says, no, it must be the 9th because the 9th was when they started the fire. And that's where they go. Yes, fire them actually wait till sundown. So depending on your tradition, some of the prohibitions of Tisha B'Av might go longer than Mincha on the 10th. Absolutely right. And this is actually taken so seriously by some rabbis that we find out that some people literally actually fasted on the 10th. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Tziem, Chiv Asiri. He actually did twice. He did 2 days of fasting. He fasted on the 10th and also the 9th. So we have to unpack a little wire in a second. Rabbi Abun, Tziem, Chiv Asiri. He also, Rabbi Abun also did the same thing. He would fast both days. Rabbi Levi, Tziem, Chiv Alele Asiri. Rabbi Levi would fast on the 9th and also sort of going into the evening of the 10th. So here it seems there is a bunch of rabbis who took this tradition, the fact that the temple was burnt on the 10th, so seriously that they sort of kept their fast going for longer than the 9th in order to cover the fact that it was burning on the 10th. Now, I think there's at least two different ways you might think about the practice of these rabbis and why they decided to do this. One possibility is, right, they didn't know, they felt like they weren't sure whether Tisha B'Av really should be the 9th or the 10th, right? In other words, Rabbi Chiya's question at the beginning, logically they should fast on the 10th. They're sort of worried about that. They're like, oh, I don't know, maybe that's right. I guess we do it on the 9th, but maybe we should actually be doing it on the 10th. So given that they don't know, they're not sure exactly which is the right day, then they end up fasting both days. Another way to think about it might be that actually they just feel like they need to commemorate exactly what happened when it happened, which is to say, you know, they need to fast on the 9th because that was when the fire started, and then they need to fast on the 10th because the fire was still going on the 10th. And that might explain Rabbi Levi's position specifically, where he sort of, the fire sort of continued burning into the 10th. Maybe it didn't burn the whole 10th. So Rabbi Levi therefore thinks that you fast on the 9th and sort of into the 10th, but not the whole 10th. And that also explains the sort of halfway through tradition that I mentioned before about the prohibitions of Tisha B'Av ending halfway through the 10th for many people. But yeah, it's a very destabilizing statement here to a certain extent, which is that we just had a whole Mishnah sort of explaining to us why the 9th was so significant and all of these terrible things that happened on the 9th. And then it turns out we get to this Talmud here, to this Sugya, and it turns out that maybe it should have been the 10th and maybe the 9th wasn't such a big deal. So we've seen sort of the destabilizing of the 9th. This sort of sets the stage for the star of our shiur today, of the story, for Rabbi's attempt to abolish Tisha B'Av. So here's what happens. So the story is reported by Rabbi Ba Bar Zavda. Bar is just short for Abba. Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda. And he is reporting his teacher, Rabbi Chanina. Now we're going to see in a second, there's actually another student of Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Elazar, who here is just Rabbi Lazar. They like to drop off the alephs in the Yerushalmi. So Abba becomes Ba, Elazar becomes Lazar. So Rabbi Elazar is another of Rabbi Chanina's students. And we're going to see they have conflicting opinions as to what actually happened. And then we're sort of through a sort of circuitous route, we're going to end up seeing that the Talmud Yerushalmi actually decides which of the two is more correct. So Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda b'shem Rabbi Chanina, he reports that Bikesh Rabbi la'akor Tisha B'Av v'lo hinichu lo. Rabbi sought to uproot Tisha B'Av, but they did not let him. His colleagues did not let him. Okay, so we don't really know why he thought that, and we don't know why they stopped him, but that is the first version of the story. Bamar lo Rabbi Lazar. Then Rabbi Lazar turns to Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda. Imcha hayiti. I was with you when Rabbi Chanina said this thing. V'lo itamar tachi, and it wasn't said thus. Like, this is not what Rabbi Chanina said. You have misremembered what Rabbi Chanina said. What Rabbi Chanina said is, Bikesh Rabbi la'akor Tisha B'Av shechal lihyot b'Shabbat v'lo hinichudo. What he thought was he might uproot Tisha B'Av that fell on Shabbat, and they didn't permit it. Amar ho'il v'nidache yidache, since it was pushed off, let it be pushed off. Amru yidche l'machar. No, it should be pushed off till tomorrow. So what we do, actually, even today, when Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbat, is we don't fast on the 9th, we fast on the 10th. And it sort of gets pushed off. And so in this case, according to Rabbi Elazar's version of the story, Rabbi Elazar says, yeah, Rabbi didn't try to get rid of Tisha B'Av in total. It was just a year when the 9th of Av fell on Shabbat. So then Rabbi figured, okay, well, there's no 9th of Av. We're not going to fast on Shabbat for 9th of Av. So I guess we don't have to do Tisha B'Av this year. Maybe Tisha B'Av will do it. We'll do it next year, but this year we don't have to do it. And his colleagues basically responded, it's like, no, that cannot be. In fact, we just do it on Sunday. Like, we have a perfectly reasonable way to solve this problem. We'll just fast on Sunday. We'll do it on the 10th. Yeah, sure, it's not Tisha B'Av, but it's still Asara B'Av, and that's good enough. So we got these two versions of the story, and they might give sort of different psychologies for Rabbi here, right? Certainly the first version seems more radical, right? Which is he just tried to get rid of it totally. Maybe he just wants to reevaluate Jewish relationship to the temple, Jewish relationship to the Romans, Jewish relationship to sort of political sovereignty. He might want to reevaluate any of those things. The second version seems more like an argument about the rootedness of the day of the 9th or the 10th, although it could also be, as pointed out, it could also be sort of a first step. It's like, really, I'd like to get rid of Tisha B'Av. No one's going to buy that, but at least they'll buy it this year when it's on a Saturday. Now, we're going to find out that the Yerushalmi has a strong opinion as to which of these traditions was correct, which of these was the original thing that actually happened. And it sort of takes us there through a circuitous route over here. So we're just going to go through this fairly quickly. He repaid him So this sort of goes back to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Bar Bar Zavda. So remember, both of them were students of Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda started the conversation, said, oh, Rabbi tried to get rid of Tisha B'Av entirely. And then Rabbi Elazar was like, no, I was there, and that's not what he said. And so we're going to see sort of the reverse scenario about a completely different case. And this case is about the commandment of Peru Urvu, about procreation. And classically in Halakha, the commandment of procreation only applies to men, but there was a minority opinion in the Mishnah that applied it to men and women, which is the discussion here. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka Omer, this is the guy in that Mishnah, in Yevamot, Al Shnehen Omer, it's actually about both of them, because it says, Vayvarech Otam Elohim, God actually blessed both the men and the women. Vayomer lahem Elohim, and then God said to both of them, Peru Urvu, etc. So that's Rabbi Yochanan just supporting his position that the mitzvah of procreation of Peru Urvu applies to both men and women against what is now established halakha. And then Rabbi Elazar now quotes first, Rabbi Elazar, b'shem Rabbi Hanina. He quotes something his teacher Rabbi Hanina said. Halakha ki Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. Yep, that's actually the halakha. We follow Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka's rule. And then Amarli Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, but then Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda turns to him in a reverse situation than what we had before, where Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda started and then Rabbi Elazar approached him. In the reverse situation, he says, Imcha hayiti v'lo itamart. I was with you, and that's not what it said. That's literally not what Rabbi Hanina said. What he said was, Ela im haita tovat lihinasei hadin ima. You can use the sort of, it's a bit complicated, I don't want to get bogged down into it, but basically you can use the idea that women want children as a legal mechanism to sort of get them into marriages as fast as possible. But that doesn't mean that halakha is literally Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, that actually Peru Urvu applies to both men and women. So once again, we have one rabbi who reports the sort of a basic, simple sense, and the other person turns around and says, no, I was there when Rabbi Hanina said this, and he said something more subtle and more nuanced. And that's what happens. Bakara Alehon, this is the resolution. Tovim Hashanayim Min Ha'achad. Two are better than one. In other words, it's the admission that if the first person was the only person who had heard Rabbi Hanina said the thing, then they would have come to the wrong conclusion as to what Rabbi Hanina said. So thank goodness there were two people. Two people are better than one. Two students heard Rabbi Hanina, and between the two of them, they remembered what Rabbi Hanina said accurately, which is the more nuanced version. So in both cases, what they're saying is that the original rabbi who quoted the sort of simple version of Rabbi Hanina, in our case, that Rabbi just tried to uproot Tisha B'Av totally, was incorrect, right? He actually remembered what Rabbi Hanina said incorrectly. He sort of remembered that this happens to all of us all the time. He sort of distill something that you heard into something that was much simpler than what you were told originally, and easier to remember, but also false, therefore. And Rabbi Elazar was the one who remembered it correctly. So, and that's why it's better to have multiple students. You have two students who hear a statement, and then you'll be able to sort of correct against each other to make sure that you have the right statement. And no matter who said it wrong, the other person can correct the other one, and then we all move on, knowing that we have the true statement of Rabbi Hanina. So at the end, we have both of these versions of Rabbi's action, and we're not sure which one is sort of real. And then the Yerushalmi sort of comes hard down on the line. Certainly it was the second one, the less sort of, I don't know, bold, controversial version, where he just tried to get rid of it for 1 year, and because they couldn't keep the actual Tisha B'Av. And not the sort of more controversial version where he tried to get rid of it entirely. Now, you could also imagine why you would want to say that, which is to say, well, maybe I don't want Rabbi to say something so radical as to just get rid of an entire holiday. And so maybe, you know, the inertia over time might be like, even if Rabbi's original action was to try to get rid of Tisha B'Av in its entirety, you could imagine people further down the line saying, no, that wasn't what happened. Please, it was only Shabbat, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, so the natural skepticism I think is relevant there too, but the truth is that you can actually pull out a little bit of other cases, and you might be able to come to a sort of a more consistent picture of what Rabbi is trying to do here, and of what he was attempting to do by either version of getting rid of Tisha B'Av entirely or getting Tisha B'Av for that 1 year. So I've got a couple of other sources about this. I've sort of given more context than is technically necessary, because really what we're talking about here in this Megillah passage, also elsewhere in the Yerushalmi, is that there's a contested prohibition on work, on doing your normal labor on Purim. And so we have somebody over here, we have Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, who says that you shouldn't do any labor on Purim. And then it turns out that Rabbi had a particular opinion that you should do labor on Purim, which also dovetails with Shivar Sarba Tammuz. And you can sort of put this all together and you can sort of get a sense of maybe what Rabbi was trying to do with some of these actions. So this is what the Yerushalmi says over here in this box that I just highlighted. Milte de Rabbi Pliga, the word of Rabbi disagrees. De Rabbi hayam afar seimatz mo shnei yamim bashana. He would publicize himself 2 days per year. It's not totally obvious what publicize means in this context, but it sounds like what he would do is he would sort of do a specific action in public to make sure that everybody knew that he thought that this particular action was completely fine, even though other people thought it was forbidden. And these are the 2 days. He would rochetz b'shiva sarba tamuz. He would wash on the 17th of Tammuz, where it's normally forbidden on a fast day to wash, but notei anatiyot before him, and he would plant plants on Purim. He would do sort of agricultural labor on Purim. Okay, so let's put this together now. So we have now three opinions of Rabbi, which, by the way, the Bavli puts together straight up in one statement, which I'll just show you quickly down here. Right, the Bavli's version of this story just puts this all together. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Hanina. It's the same people we had before. Rabbi Nata, although it's the characters are swapped, so Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Abu Razavta, but never mind. Rabbi Nata Natiya Bafurim, he planted plants on Purim, Verachat Bakrona Shal Tzipori, Beshiva Sabbat Tammuz, and he washed in this particular place, the wagon house of Sepphoris, on the 17th of Tammuz. Uvikesh Akor Tisha B'Av, and he tried to get rid of Tisha B'Av entirely. V'lo Hodilo, they didn't agree, they didn't let him. That they didn't agree to him, that seems to be just about Tisha B'Av, not about the other two things. So the Bavli already put these things together, right, as a consistent sort of picture of what Rabbi was trying to do. Okay, we'll pick up another element of his personality we might be able to put together. This is another place in the Yerushalmi where he talks about one of the sort of core decrees that is known to Rabbi from the Mishnah, which is that he permitted the purchasing of vegetables after the Shemitah year immediately. Meaning normally you have to sort of wait for the new crops to come in and there's some amount of delay before you're allowed to buy them. He permitted the vegetables as soon as the Shemitah goes out. And there's a bunch of traditions in the Yerushalmi which sort of unpacks this permission. And this is one of them. And it's a very dramatic one. So he says, Rabbi Hitir Lekach, Yerek Mimotzei Shvit. He permitted this the vegetables on the eighth year straight away. V'hakol Melizin Alav. And everyone turned on him. This was not a popular position of his for some reason. Amar Lahen, so he sort of defends himself. Bo undayan kativ, bo undayan. Okay, let's talk about it. Great, let's talk about it. I think that my opinion is probably, I might be able to persuade you. Kativ, there's a pasuk about the king Chizkiah. V'chitat nechash hanachoshet. He cut down the bronze serpent. Now, the bronze serpent came from a few weeks ago in the parsha, in Parsha Chukat, the serpent that was made by Moshe to cure the people of the snake bites. But it has sort of a strange after issue, which is that after life, where it sort of goes, it gets moved into the temple, and it becomes an idol that people worship, which is called Nehushtan. And in the end, the king Chizkiah is the one who cut it down. And who removed those idolatrous things from the temple. But Rabbi's question is, V'chi lo amad tzadik mi Moshe bat Chizkiyahu l'haviro. There was no righteous person at all. There was no tzadik from the days of Moshe until Chizkiyahu. Not a single person could have taken it down. Ela ota atara hiniach lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'hit aterba. But rather, what this proves is that the crown, sort of the glory of taking down Nehushtan, was left by God for him to be crowned through, sort of a way to get him, for Chizkiyahu to gain merit, Chizkiyahu to gain the merit of being the one to take these things down. Sure, other people could have done it, but he ended up getting the merit to do so. Va'anan, and so too, ha'atara hazot hiniach ha'kadosh baruch hu lanu litater ba. This crown of the Shemitah vegetables, God left for us to be crowned through. So in other words, Rabbi is saying, is like, look, we have an opportunity here. God gave us this opportunity. We should use it. I don't care what precedent you have. I don't care what happened in the past. In the end of the day, we have an opportunity to make the halakha better, and we should use it. So that may also sort of play into his sort of bullishness on these other days, which is to say, like, he sees sort of a practice on Shiva Saba Tammuz and Purim of treating them very seriously. And he basically wants to say, it's like, we don't have to treat it so seriously. We can actually take the initiative. I know, I understand that in the past it's been treated seriously, but we don't have to do that anymore. We have the opportunity to change the way the practice will flow in the future. And that could be coming back to his Tisha B'Av way of thinking, right? Which is to say, you know, okay, sure, we've mourned the temple for a long time, but maybe we don't have to do that anymore. We actually have a great opportunity. Let's just move on. Now, this is a very strong personality. And you sort of can sort of see sort of you know, a person sort of coming through the sources, but I don't want to go too far down this route, because for a few reasons. The first reason is Rabbi was actually not the first person to suggest abolishing Tisha B'Av. But actually, the very first mention of Tisha B'Av in any source ever talks about whether we should abolish it or not. So we're actually going to skip down to this passage from Zechariah, because actually Rabbi has sort of been a long tradition of people who are worried about whether Tisha B'Av should be done. So here we go. In Zechariah, so he has a quick question, sort of a question that was sent to the priests and the prophets, which Zechariah answers. And the answer is very, very long. I haven't given you the whole answer, but and it's also a bit unclear in a few places, but we'll sort of unpack it as we go. Vayhi b'shnat arba l'dar yavesh ha-melech haya d'vartnai el Zechariah ba'arba l'chodesh ha-tshiv l'chislev. This is just an introduction. This was when the word of God came to Zechariah on this time, and this was the circumstances that it happened. Vayishlach beit el tsar etzer v'regem melech, these guys, beit el tsar etzer and regem melech, and his men, they sent l'chalot et p'nei Adonai, they sent to sort of appease God. The exact setup of this is not totally clear, but the question is clear. Le'mor, el ha-kohanim asher le'beit Adonai tzvaot, ve'el ha-nevi'im le'mor. This is my question that I want you to say to the priests and to the prophets of the temple. Ha'evke b'chodesh ha-chamishi ha-nizer ka'asher asiti zeh kamashanim. Should I weep on the fifth month ha-nizer, sort of consecration, of sort of separation? Should I weep on this month like I used to many years, like I've done for many years? So this is, the fifth month is, if you're counting from Nisan, the fifth month is Av. So this seems to be the very first mention in any text of the fast of Av, what we call Tisha B'Av. And already the first question that we hear about it is, do I need to do this anymore? Right? Because presumably it seems to be in sort of response to the destruction of the temple. And now in Darius's day and Zechariah's day, things are sort of coming together. The Jews may be able to go back to Eretz Israel and rebuild their temple. And that's what's happening in the zeitgeist right there. So these guys, Beit El Tsar Etzer, Regem Melech and his men, they are wondering what to do now, given the historical circumstances have changed. And this is aspects of his very interesting response, of God's response to this question. This is the word of God that came to me. Emor El Kol Am Haaretz, say to the whole people of the land, Ve'el HaKohanim, and to the priests, Lemor. Ki tzamtem v'safod v'chamishi u'vashvi'i, the seventh month, if you're counting from Nisan, is probably Tishrei, meaning Yom Kippur. So when you fast and you mourn on the fifth and the seventh of the month, v'zeh shivim shana, this lasts 70 years since the temple was destroyed, hatzom tzamtuni ani, did you fast for me, says God? V'chi tochlu, v'chi tishtu, when you ate and when you drink, Hallo atem ha'ochlim ba'atem ha'shotim, weren't you the ones doing the eating and the drinking? In other words, God is basically disavowing any knowledge of these fasts. He's like, these things came from you. I never commanded this. This is all you. I didn't ask you to fast. I didn't ask you to eat. None of those things. That's just up to you. You decided to turn these into fast days. Okay, what's that got to do with me, says God. And now God is going to explain what God actually asked them to do. Hallo et adarim asher kara Adonai b'yad nevim harishonim v'yot Yerushalayim yoshevet. Isn't this what God said in those days when everything was good, when everything was happy, through the early prophets? And now he's going to continue. Ko amar Adonai tzvaot lemor, mishpat emet shfotu, b'chesed brachamim asu, ish et achiv. This is what the early prophets said. They said, do truth and justice. Judge true justice. Love and mercy you should do to everyone, each with their fellow. Valmanaviatom gervaani, and these sort of oppressed classes, al tashoku, do not oppress them. Virat ish achiv al tashavu bilvavchem, and don't plan evil to your kinsmen in your hearts. Vayami lakshiv, but they actually just refuse to listen. In other words, God is just making this clear. Like, you decided to fast. I've been telling you the whole time that you need to have a just society. You're the ones who decided to fast. You never listened to what I said. Instead, you decided to fast. Okay, so this sort of fits in with a broader sort of prophetic critique of a performative religiosity without any moral fiber. And it sort of features prominently in the Yom Kippur service also, which is the Haftarah for Shachar Yom Kippur is a passage from Yeshayahu, from Isaiah, about a very similar thing, which is basically like, it's very nice that you're fasting. I don't care about your fast. Now go home and then look after some poor people, because that's actually what I care about. And this is sort of a similar setup here. And then God continues saying, oh, they didn't listen, and then got these terrible things. And then finally, the answer sort of comes in the next parak, in the next chapter. Ko amar Adonai Tzvaot. This is what God said. Som haravi'i, the fourth, which matches to our Shiva Sarba Tammuz, the fourth month. But som hachamishi, Tisha B'Av. But som hashvi'i, maybe it's Som Gedalia or Yom Kippur, both of them happen in the seventh month. But Som HaTziri, and the tenth month, which we know as Asra B'Tevet, Yihya Levet Yehudas, L'Sason U'Simcha U'Moadim Tovim V'Amet V'Shalom Ehavu. Firstly, they will be happy days. They will not be fast anymore. They'll be happy. And secondly, love, truth, and peace. Now, it's sort of a warning to say, like, I don't know, it's hard to know how to put it all together, actually. I'm not going to say too much about how to put it together, because I think there's a bunch of different ways you could read it. I think a clear way you could be reading this here is to say, yeah, those fasts are over. Those are actually happy days now. Like, as long as you're conducting a just society, there is no reason to keep these fasts anymore. Like, that's not what God ever wanted. But that's not how the sort of rabbinic tradition has understood these, because they know that there are fasts that are set on the calendar. And the sort of level of destabilization that Rabbi was apparently willing to countenance is not the way it sort of Judaism went. These fasts became sort of established days in the calendar. So established that, you know, the original way of fasting was in response to a specific disaster, like mainly droughts. And actually Hadar, you know, did a fast in response to disaster last year, and that sort of earlier frame. But these days, almost entirely, that form of fasting has just been wiped away. And the only fasting we have is the fasting that's on the calendar, the Som Gedalia, Asra B'Tevet, Shiva Sarba Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, and a few others. I know I'm keeping it, obviously. But the rabbinic tradition generally understands that this moves to a future time. Some future time, these days will be happy days. Right now, that will keep them as fasts. Though that someday in the future is historically rooted. So again, this is a question of sort of the myth and the history that sort of plays in here. So on the one hand here, you know, Zechariah reports that God doesn't care about these fasts. Do whatever you want with them. And on the other hand, they're commemorating, and also the way we have them now is they're commemorating something real and historical. And the way the Talmud sort of digests this Zechariah passage is to root Zechariah's promise that they will be days of gladness in historical circumstances. And that's this figure right here, which we don't need to get into too much, but we'll go to this box on page 7 over here. So the key point is, which is that it gets sort of digested through Rav Papa into the Talmud, and he says, this is what it means. Bizman sheyesh shalom, yihyu l'sason l'simcha. When there is peace, then these fasts, the four fasts we just mentioned, right, the four fasts most associated with the destruction of Jerusalem, then they will be days of joy and gladness. Yeshma, but if there is persecution, there'll be fasts. But there's another category, which is Ein Shma ve'Ein Shalom, sort of some middle category, no persecution, also no fast. Ratzu mitanin, ratzu ein mitanin. In those cases, the fast is actually optional. You can choose whether to fast on those days or not. And this basically forces you to constantly reevaluate. It's like, I don't know, are we in a day of shmad, of persecution, or are we in days of peace, or are we days in the middle? I mean, almost always you're going to be able to say we're certainly in the middle. And maybe in the last year, it feels like we're more in a day of shmad, a day of persecution. But there were many years after the establishment of the State of Israel that felt like shalom to a certain extent, and maybe actually the Tisha B'Av should be totally abrogated for the same reason that this sugya sort of plays out. So whatever, you have a bunch of different things going on here. You have Zachariah, who's trying to say that the fast, who cares about the fast anyway, which may be in the background of the sort of willingness of Rabbi to sort of overturn established precedent in these cases. But there's also a whole historical assessment and historical memory. And here the historical assessment is, okay, do these fasts matter? Well, it depends on what your state of the world, what you think the state of the world is. But actually, even though Zachariah was talking about all four of these fasts together, it turns out in the Bavli, Tisha B'Av sort of gets an exception. It actually sort of just gets taken out of the rule of the other three. And this is how Rav Papa also explains it. Shani Tisha B'Av. It's actually just different. Tisha B'Av is a different case. Ho'il v'huchbalu bo tzarot. Because there was sort of doubling of troubles, presumably referring to the destruction of both temples. And then they quote the mission that we started with, right? But Tisha B'Av charav habayit b'rishna v'ashniyah. And some of the other things that they missed, right? They didn't quote everything from that Mishnah. So Tisha B'Av actually sort of gets exempted. It's actually like three of the four of these fasts that Zachariah talks about, including Shivat Arba Tammuz, those are historically rooted. In a way, actually, Tisha B'Av is not, right? The way this sort of felt falls out is Tisha B'Av actually is beyond history. It's actually all mythology. And this, I think, may sort of come back to explain a little bit about the ninth and the tenth, right? That's a very historically rooted question of, do we fast on the ninth? Do we fast on the tenth? But the truth is that it's not these five things that we care about on Tisha B'Av. It is a million things that have happened to Jews over centuries and millennia that we think about on Tisha B'Av. And I would vouch to say almost none of those things happen on Tisha B'Av, the actual day. It's become a sort of more mythological catch-all for tragedies in general. And that seems to be what this piece at the end of Rav Papa here is trying to sort of capture, which is that Tisha B'Av is just its own thing. It's not really a historical commemoration anymore. It's actually just bigger than that. And it actually sort of leaves the question of, are we in Shalom or are we in Shmad? Are we in peace or persecution that the other fasts are so rooted in? And here's where we sort of get a bit of a downer at the end of this, which is to say, but I think it's extremely unlikely that Rabbi tried to actually uproot Tisha B'Av entirely. And in fact, it seems pretty likely that Tosfot here has the exact shot, the exact case of what Rabbi was actually doing. And this is right in the bottom here, which is, Inami yesh lomar deratzal akro michi l'kavo bet asiri. Seems like Rabbi actually was still in that very much historical framework of Tisha B'Av. Which is to say, you know, he wanted to move it from the 9th to the 10th, probably because he thought the temple was burning on the 10th, right? So it seems like most probably what Rabbi actually meant, this, by the way, makes sense of the language la'akaro, to uproot it, as opposed to what you might have expected if it was to cancel it, which would have been lavatalo, to just remove it entirely. La'akaro sounds like you could like sort of uproot it and sort of move it somewhere else, plant it somewhere else. And that is the most likely scenario of what Rabbi was trying to do. Which was that he tried to move it from the 9th to the 10th because he thought the 9th was incorrect as a historical memory. And the 10th was more correct because that was when the temple was actually burning. And that's almost certainly what happened. And even though, and so he basically, like in both of the versions, right? So the first version, he just tried to move it. He just said, okay, we're done with the 9th. We're going to do the 10th from now on. And in the other version, he saw his opportunity that year. And was like, oh, wait, it's Shabbat. So we're going to be doing it on Sunday anyway. So let's just make it the 10th forever, for all time. Anyway, both of those initiatives failed. And I think part of why it failed is because I think he actually didn't really understand the way Tisha B'Av functions in the Jewish calendar, or certainly has come to function in the Jewish calendar. And as not actually rooted in historical happenings, doesn't really matter what happened on Tisha B'Av or what didn't. Part of it is, it's just the day on the calendar that sort of serves a more mythological role that just sort of contains our sorrow and our tragedy. And that's why it doesn't really matter whether it's the 9th or the 10th, actually. And it doesn't have to match the destruction of the temple at all. It could be really any day. It just happens that this day fits the bill. So thank you very much for going on this exploration of my favorite Chacham, my favorite rabbi from the Talmudic period, and what he was thinking of doing when he tried to not quite abolish Tisha B'Av, but sort of move it to another day. And I hope this sort of Spurs as a way of thinking of like the way in which the holidays function as historical markers and also as sort of mythological markers sort of outside of history. And the combination of those two things, I think, is one of the things that makes Judaism and Jewish calendar really very special, is the combination of sort of history and myth. You can kind of put them all together. An invitation to think about that for the Chagim in general, and for Tisha B'Av in particular.